This is Dr. Chad Edwards, and you are listening to podcast number 2 of Against the Grain.
Welcome to Against the Grain podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards, where he challenges the status quo when it comes to medicine. We get into hot topics in the medical field with real stories from real patients to help you on your way to a healthy lifestyle. Get ready, because we're about to go against the grain.
This is Brian Wilkes here with my good friend and real doctor, since it said real at least 5 times in that intro. You are a real doctor, right?
That is correct.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That helps. I think that helps the whole situation here, right?
I think it adds a little bit of credibility.
I agree. Hey, Chad, I got a question for you. I've been thinking about it. It's a pretty deep question. Have you been thinking about what you're getting for me for Christmas? Christmas is coming up. No?
No, I'm not going to discuss that.
Okay, well, I'll give you some... I'll give you a hint. Here's what you... No, I'm not going to hint. I'm going to be really direct with you. I've got a cold and I need a Z-Pack. Okay? How does that work?
Do you just know my hot buttons?
Is that wrong? Is that bad? Yeah, no. Listen, I don't need a long explanation because we got plenty of stuff on the show, right? Just give me the 10-second reason why you're not going to give me a Z-Pack right now.
Because 99% of the time, it's not a bacteria, number one. Number two... Mm-hmm. Common use of antibiotics when they are not medically indicated.
Okay.
And upper respiratory infections, acute sinusitis, acute bronchitis, there's no medical scientific evidence to support the use of antibiotics in those situations. So, or there's very limited evidence. The FDA actually has some warnings about it.
Okay, here's what I'll say, Dr. Chad Edwards, okay? Will it make me feel better, yes or no?
Most
now,
of the time?
Yes.
No.
Now. Okay, so we have a tie. So we've got Marshall here. He does something on the show. He's got a big keyboard in front of him. I like a lot of buttons, a lot of stuff. So you have to decide, does he give me a Z-Pack for Christmas or just a normal gift like a car?
I have to say that for the credibility, I got to give the win to him. So it sounds like just a regular Christmas gift like a car.
Just a okay. So, you know, it's a...
Yeah, you lost that one.
Okay. That's great. So I'll just be sick for another week or so, and then I got myself a Christmas present. That's great. Appreciate that, Chad.
It's because I care.
Let's get to the important stuff. Our sponsors, Revolution Health and Wellness Clinic. You know a little bit about those people, right, Chad?
Yep, my clinic. If you're tired and fatigued, feel frustrated with doctors because they don't listen to you, want to fix your pain without surgery, if you answered yes to any of those, give us a call, 918-935-3636, or visit our website at revolutionhealth.org. Schedule your appointment.
Awesome. I get the good one. The Upper Cervical Health Centers, you know these people, great people. Their patients report an improvement of over 75% in their overall health. The interesting thing about these guys is they're not your typical chiropractic office, you know, where they go and they basically break your back to
snap,
fix your back.
Pop.
So their number is 918-742-2300. Again, that's 918-742-2300. Or you can visit their website at uppercervical.com. Tulsa.com/newyou. So we've got a pretty cool topic today, Chad.
This episode's hot topic.
Your lab results, are they normal? Are they?
Yeah,
that's how it's written here, so it makes it very awkward.
You know, this sounds like
about.
We're talking about labs.
Right. I mean,
that sounds pretty darn boring. And, you know, so your challenge is to make this interesting.
I'm happy to do that for a Z-Pack. How about that?
Okay, we'll talk about that after
okay,
the show.
Okay. That's another show. That's a whole other show, right?
That's right.
Okay, so tell me about lab results. Hey, I will say lab results for me, the average guy, it's going to be a challenge for you to keep me interested because they seem like some sort of algorithm written on a sheet of paper. I don't really understand them. Typically, I'm not getting lab results unless I'm sick. I'm from Oklahoma and somewhat of a redneck, right? So we don't go to the doctor unless we're sick, right? And even when we do go to the doctor, we're not feeling well. We get our labs drawn. Doctor comes in and explains it. But I have no idea who he's measuring them against. I have no idea if it's what normal means. So explain to us kind of the general, you know, if I go to just an average doctor, how he's basing all these results against who's the population, and give us some insight to that.
Sure. So basically, this started because, you know, when I started looking at medicine differently and started doing, you know, prolotherapy and, you know, just a lot of the things that I was looking at, patients would come in and they'd say, I feel bad. And they'd get labs and they'd say, everything's normal, quote, normal on your labs. And I was like, well, what is normal? We've got this range, you know, like this, you know, on thyroid, it's 0.5 to 5 for a lot of labs. And we'll say that okay, that range is normal. If you fall within that range, right, that's normal. But what does that mean?
Yeah, that's the big question, is what does normal mean?
Where did that come from? So that's kind of what we're going to talk about. And the reason that I wanted to discuss this is because I think it explains a lot of why people feel bad. They get labs, their doctors say this is normal, yet it may not be. Or you may be normal and you're actually abnormal, but you may be abnormal and you're within the normal. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it can go, you know, both, or you can be abnormal and it's, and, you know, and what, your labs are, yeah, yeah, it can go both.
I always thought, you know, what's normal for me, right?
Exactly. Well, there's normal. And then one of the things that we focus on at Revolution Health is, are you normal or are you optimal? I don't know a single person that says, nah, I'll just be normal.
Right.
I mean, you're coming to us. Let's get you optimal.
Yeah, because people shoot for average all the time, right?
Exactly. And the sad thing is
a lot of movies about that.
Sad thing is many of them miss.
Yeah, exactly.
So
they set their bar low and they miss, which is a big problem.
That's right. Yeah. So I want to go ahead and start. We're going to go a little bit out of sequence on this thing, but I'm going to go ahead and start with a story.
It's story time.
And we're going to start with a patient. We'll call her Sally. So Sally comes into us, feels awful. She's very tired. She's very athletic, runs long distances. I mean, she does marathons and half marathons and all kinds of, you know, crazy running distances, and she feels horrible. So we're like, okay, we do this all the time. We'll come on in, we'll get your labs. Well, this story really underscores why we have to consider labs and where this stuff comes from. So one of the things that can cause fatigue is thyroid. So we get a thyroid thing, a full thyroid panel. And our thyroid panels are a little bit more extensive than, you know, the way I was trained.
Tell me about, I'm not so sure that I understand typically what a thyroid does for
a
person.
Yeah, so you have the thyroid gland, sure, which makes some thyroid hormones, T4 and T3. We'll talk more about that in a future podcast, but T3 is the active form of the hormone. Basically it's the gas pedal for your metabolism. There's a thyroid receptor on almost every cell in your body. That hormone goes inside the cell, binds to the nucleus, causes a number of changes that revs up your metabolism, basically. So T3 is what you really want, but it's converted from T4. Again, so it's just biochemistry mumbo jumbo that I care about, most people don't, but T4 becomes T3. Goes all that stuff goes to the brain. Your brain sees how much you have, and it starts kicking out this stimulator hormone from the brain called TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. If you don't have enough, the brain says, thyroid gland, make more. So it kicks out this TSH. So when your TSH is low, usually that means your thyroid hormones are high, and vice versa. When your TSH is high, usually means you don't have enough. So I was taught in medical school that all you need to evaluate the thyroid is a TSH. And the interesting thing is I was taught that by a non-clinician. In other words, he's a scientist, he's a doctor, but he doesn't see patients. He was a pathologist. Brilliant, brilliant man.
Right.
But, you know, Sir William Osler said, you know, physician in the early 1900s said, listen to your patient, he's telling you the diagnosis. So when your patient says they're tired and fatigued, you get these labs and they're normal, are you listening to the labs? You listen to the patient.
That's interesting. So prior to drawing the labs, she's saying that I'm lacking energy, right? And this is a high-functioning individual, an athlete,
correct,
if you will. So
she eats clean, she exercises. Why does she feel bad?
Yeah,
that's
so
our job.
Let me ask you kind of a side note here. Would most doctors even test for the thyroid right off?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common, if you come in and you say, I'm fatigued, you know, especially for women, thyroid is a common common issue. But many times they'll get a TSH, thyroid-stimulating hormone, and they'll stop right there. And that's where this patient's story is very interesting, because her TSH was 2.02. Normal reference range on our lab is roughly 0.5 to 5. So that's well within what we define as normal. But that didn't answer the question on, is it thyroid? And if all I got was a TSH, it would end there. Mm-hmm. And we would say, oh, there's nothing wrong with your thyroid. There's nothing, quote, wrong with you. You're just tired, depressed. Here's your antidepressant. You know, maybe it's your hormones, maybe you don't get enough sleep, you know, you got stress in your life, whatever. But remember we mentioned T4 and T3.
Right.
So we measured her T4, which many doctors won't do. Sometimes under a little bit of duress, the patient says, I want this stuff checked. They'll go ahead and measure it. Some endocrinologists will go ahead and measure it. Some primary care doctors will go ahead and measure it. Hers was 2.16, which is actually elevated. That's right. Outside the normal range. If all I got was a TSH, it wouldn't show me that elevated T4.
Let's stop here.
Okay.
Again, define normal in this instance is compared to the thousands of other people that have gotten the same test, not compared to her previous labs, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, so on the upper limit of normal, depending on the lab, you're looking at around 2.
Okay.
You know, something like that. You know, but 1.8. So hers was outside that normal range. It was too high.
Right.
So if she were on thyroid medicine, I would say, oh, you got too much. Well, actually, the way I was trained, I would say, nope, you got enough because your TSH is normal.
Right.
Everything is based on the TSH. So her free T4 was a little bit elevated. T4 has to be converted to T3. And so we checked her T3 also. And again, T3 is that active form of the hormone. Hers was 1.9, which is actually pretty darn low. So got enough T4. If all I checked was T4, we'd say you got enough thyroid hormones. But the one that really matters, the T3, is low. So she's not making enough T3 from that T4. But the really interesting thing for her is her reverse T3. And again, topic of another podcast, but it's kind of the anti-T3.
Right.
It comes from T4. And it works against T3. So she had reverse T3, which is kind of blocking the T3. And hers was off the charts elevated. Her problem was a thyroid hormone problem. It was not a thyroid problem because her thyroid gland is functioning normally.
Right.
She's making the T4. She's making the hormones, but she's converting into a different hormone that's not appropriate. And therein was her problem. Now, we have to dig into why. That's another topic. But if all I got was a TSH, it wouldn't answer the question. So there's two important things I would say that we need to understand about our labs. Number one, you got to ask the right question. If you don't ask the right question, you'll never get the right answer. So that's the first piece on labs. And not really the major topic of this podcast, but you got to ask the right question.
Okay.
And if you don't, you get a bunch of labs and they say you're normal.
Right.
Well, they just haven't. They haven't completed their workup.
But I would challenge you on this only because, for me, I'm a business guy. I've said this a couple times on the first podcast. I know nothing about, the right questions to ask. How does a person go into their doctor's office and even begin to lead them down? Is it more the doctor asking the right question or the patient asking the right question?
I think
it goes back to our first podcast. Maybe they just don't, the doctor certainly doesn't have, in traditional medicine these days, doesn't have time to ask a lot of the right questions.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the issue for me is that patients, my job as the physician, as this patient's doctor, is to ask these questions and to answer them with the workup. So the patient comes in with a complaint and they'll say, I'm tired, I'm fatigued,
right?
Whatever it is. And my job is to ask the questions so that I can get to the right answer.
The leading questions
now,
to get to it, yeah.
My traditional medical education did not give me the tools that I needed to be able to answer this question adequately. I was actually taught in medical school that reverse T3 thing was hogwash. It wasn't true. Again, I was taught that by a non-clinician. I will tell you with 100% certainty that it absolutely does matter because when you fix it, they get better.
Well, this particular story, did she get better, Sally?
Yeah. So we actually gave her a little bit of T3.
Right.
So T3 only medication. And then we started looking into the underlying problems and nutrition and why does it convert. And a couple of months later, she felt fantastic. We got her off of those the T3 only medications. We just did that to help her feel better in the interim. We watch for all the side effects, and these are things that need to be managed because there's risks associated with that, but they're small, especially if you manage those. She felt amazing, and today she's out doing her thing, running her marathons and eating clean like she was before, and she's really working on the stress because that was a major contributor. But she feels fantastic, but we had to ask the right questions.
Yeah, well, I'm still kind of ticked off about that you won't give me my Z-Pack because I'm 100% sure that I'll feel better 2 days from now.
Well,
Good for Sally, right? Sounds like you got to go in and pay the money and get the product.
Well,
right?
I'll just give you some Prozac to deal with your depression from not getting your Z-Pack.
Hey, we're going to do a podcast on that, but that's going to be a month-long podcast, right? The use of Prozac.
Yeah, but it's going to be really depressing.
Yeah, yeah. So let's go right to, I'm looking at some of these notes here, and there's, I don't understand all the medical jargon, but there's a difference between functional medical testing that we've, you know, lab results that we've kind of talked about, and traditional medicine and how they interpret it differently.
Yeah.
I want to go back through that one more time.
Sure.
Because I think that's important.
Yeah, absolutely. So the question that we need to keep in our brain is why? Somebody comes in, they say, I feel bad, I'm tired, you know, this is going on. The real question is why? You know, we'll be talking, you know, in the next couple of podcasts, we'll be talking about testosterone. And I've got these young guys. I had a guy that was 22 years old come in and his testosterone was just over 100. I literally have some female patients that have higher levels of testosterone than what he had.
Wow, 25 years old.
Correct, 22.
He's Marshall's age.
So I didn't believe it, so I rechecked it, and it actually came back at 75.
Wow.
So when you have a 22-year-old male patient
confirmed
on two labs to have low testosterone,
right,
you have to ask the question, why? Why is this? So you've got the problem, and you can, quote, manage the problem, but why did this happen to begin with? And so you can either just prescribe a medication, a pill, or whatever, to fix, you know, to correct his testosterone, you know, make his labs look normal, or you can address the underlying problem. Why did this happen to begin with? So when we look at functional medicine, we're constantly asking that question, why? You have high blood pressure? Why do you have high blood pressure? Let's fix the why, and then we don't have to worry about managing this abnormal blood pressure. So that's our whole focus with functional medicine. Let's get to the basics. Let's get to the basis of this, the foundation. Fix the foundation. Make it where you don't need all of these other medications. Because these other medications, and I'm not anti-medication, I use them almost every day. As in, I prescribe them almost every day.
Right.
But it's not
getting to the foundational problems.
That's correct.
Of your makeup, of your chemistry.
That's exactly right.
So if you're a person that's overweight and you have diabetes, and there's a direct correlation, I think people can understand that. You know, you lose weight, your diabetes can be improved.
That's right.
Heart conditions, all that good stuff. But it is very common that that people obviously, I think anyone would agree that the model for today's medicine is you take a pill, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You go in with your problem.
And you're against that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, again, it has its place.
Right.
But you can't just fill in the gaps without asking why. So I think it's very important to ask that why question.
That's interesting. So, you know, in business, we have metrics, right? We have metrics where we'll say as a business, we want to have this much profitability, or we want to produce this much product. In order to do that, though, we have to back up and start asking ourselves, what can we change fundamentally in our process and business to get to those results? So I got to see medicine the same way. You don't start with the lab. It can be a conversational piece. It can be a goal to get to, right?
Correct.
But you have to put in the work to make the chemistry right.
Yeah, and you know, again, going back to what Dr. Osler said, is that, you know, listen to the patient. They're telling you the diagnosis. So when you actually listen to their patient, ask the right questions, work through. So we develop what's called a differential diagnosis. You come in, you say, I'm tired. We'll say, okay, it could be testosterone. It could be adrenals. It could be nutrition. It could be stress. It could be sleep, all these kinds of things.
Right.
And we'll start working through those and checking them off of our list. That's normal. That's a normal medical paradigm. It's when things don't fit that mold that we have to dig a little bit deeper. We have to figure out why, you know, we have to find the right category. Is it the testosterone? Then we have to ask the why.
Right.
And again, it's not just a simple matter of, you know, well, here's your testosterone.
Well, you know, Chad, I hate to give you compliments, you know, to your face.
Yeah,
especially, right?
I mean, I can turn around if you want.
You know, Chad, for people listening, Chad and I went to college together. So I've known this guy a long time. He pays me zero to be on this show, by the way. I believe in Chad. He's a great guy. I can say personally, he's done a lot for my family. I'm disappointed he won't give me a Z-Pack, but that's probably, I'll continue on the next couple of shows asking.
Sometimes patients have to be protected from themselves.
Yeah, well, so do doctors. So,
amen.
Yeah, more so than any category, I would say. But on that note, I one of the things I really, really like about you, Chad, that I've seen, and it's who you are, is, you know, I think you went to, having known you in college, I think you, my perception is you went to medical school for all the right reasons, because you were making a contribution to an impact to, you know, whether it be your town, your city, or the place that you live, to contributing to overall well-being of a person. You've always been interested in health, right? My perception towards some doctors is they go to medical school for probably a lot of the wrong reasons, right? And tell me a little bit about when you begin to see the traditional medicine model, and we talked about it a little bit in our first podcast of, you know, you draw lab results, you prescribe a pill to somebody, and it's burn and churn, right? It's how many people you can get through the door. I think that all leads back. This lab work conversation leads back to the average doctor is not set up to win for their patient, right?
Correct.
And they're not really all that concerned about the overall health of the patient, right? They're not really concerned about that.
Well, but let's look at how they get to that point. And, right, you know, because patients ask me this kind of stuff a lot.
Right.
They'll think, you know, do doctors not care? I think the vast majority of physicians out there very much do care. That's why they go into medicine. They want to help people and, you know, all those kinds
of things. Yeah, because for me, my perception is they don't. I'm with all the other people that say that, but you have insight on that. I get it.
Right.
They start out caring.
My medical school class, we had 88 right. people. They are all wonderful, fantastic people. I have nothing but respect for them. And that was just, you know, my class. I've worked, you know, at a major clinic here in Tulsa. I've worked in the military and, you know, most of them very traditionally trained. These people care. They're good people. But when you look at the system, number one, in medical school, we were taught biochemistry, anatomy, all of those right. things that help us understand what went wrong, what got disrupted. Then you get out into clinical rotations and it shifts from understanding biochemistry and understanding anatomy and understanding pathophysiology and, you know, what's going wrong with this. It shifts away from that toward your medical mentor. Your medical mentor says, you know, you when the patient comes in, they've got this, and what drug are you going to treat them with? What study shows that you need to do this? Mm-hmm. And
they get involved, you know, maybe this was a land before time, but they're involved with drug reps. They're hearing different features and benefits, but like a more of a business situation eventually, right?
Well, yeah. And I don't think many of them think about it as business.
Right.
That it's just kind of what happens. And
right.
so, you know, the physicians that I looked up to, for the most part, knew the studies. And
right.
they would say, well, we're going to put you on this drug because this study showed that blah, 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 blah. And the
right.
ones that could quote those studies, I was like, my gosh, that guy's brilliant. I want to be that guy.
Right.
You know, and they were just amazing. But what ends up happening is they're practicing by guidelines, because those mm-hmm. guidelines are formulated from the research studies. When I was in residency, I had a physician mentor, Sammy Choi,
mm-hmm.
That was just absolutely brilliant. He was the guy that on the cover of the American Heart Association, the BLS, Basic Life Support, CPR manual.
Right.
At the time, there were pictures of, like, you know, 100 people, 100 mm-hmm. physicians. They're in scrubs and the white coats and all those things. He was the one that would say, you know, this guy right here is Billy Bob Smith, and he wrote a paper in 1972. I'm like, this guy was ridiculous
right.
what this guy knew. And he spent all of his time reading. Absolutely
interesting.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
But he taught me that you need to know the guidelines for how to practice medicine. And the great physicians will break the guidelines, and they won't practice by them. But you have to know them and know why you're deviating from them.
Yeah, so it all comes back to labs are a very personalized experience is what I'm hearing you saying.
Yeah, and going back to my yeah. original point, you make that differential diagnosis, but then you use the labs
yeah.
to confirm
the guidelines
what you're
yeah.
suspecting.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, it's I think it's this. You come into the emergency room, you've got right lower quadrant abdominal pain,
right.
you know, in the bottom of your belly on the right side. And we think that's appendicitis, so let's get an ultrasound or a CAT scan and confirm that test. We'll get a blood
yeah.
count and confirm that that
you're,
diagnosis.
You're playing within the boundaries of
right.
some pretty well documented
right.
lab
right.
Type situation. I don't even know the terms, you know. But, you know, last night I was watching when I was sick. You know I'm sick, right?
Yeah, because you need a Z-Pack.
Right. I hear what you're saying on the show. I'm still not there, though. I need a Z-Pack. I'm a business guy. I got to get back to work. But last night, I watched a PBS special when I was up late sick on Edison. And the interesting thing about Edison, you know, he's an inventor, but he's a scientist. And that's how I view doctors, is they're scientists, right? They love data. Or they should love data,
right?
They should love data. They should love taking this individual and trying to make it better, whether it's, you know, and that Edison was the same. You take an individual problem, and he wanted to fix it. And he actually had a state-of-the-art laboratory by the time he was, I think, 25, right? So he invents the light bulb, and then he has to set up this whole network topology, a grid, if you will, to get electricity to the light bulb.
Right.
So he comes out of the laboratory in order to provide literally electricity to his light bulb everywhere, right? He was miserable. So that's what I think of doctors, right? So you take a scientist, right, that invents something great for countless people. You take him out of his element, right? You throw him into this mass production environment, and he literally is miserable. He stops inventing. He stops. His passion is lost. And I got to tell you, as I watched that and I thought about this podcast, it all goes back to the lab results. Because I think doctors, I think you're probably right. They're scientists at the end of the day, right? They're getting into the science of the body,
right?
You know, and they're fascinated by it. I've never met a doctor that's not fascinated by the by the chemistry of the body. But you take them out of that passion, right? And you put them into a system of a burn and churn. Someone like Edison, right?
Right.
And so you're pumping electricity. No longer about inventing a light bulb. You're trying to pump as much electricity as you possibly can to make a profit for a large amount of investors, right?
Right.
Now, the system, as I see it, the hospitals are owned by businessmen like me, right, that demand a return from the physicians group or whatever. They hire physicians, and it literally is a burn and churn situation.
Well, and
they don't get to do a lot of science.
And you look at, you know, the way insurance reimburses and the way, just the way the whole thing is set up, the physician has no control over the revenue that's brought in. If you think about, you know, if you have a factory and you manufacture widgets and it costs you $100 to manufacture one of the widgets, but you have no control over the sale of that widget.
Right. What's the incentive? What's the,
Right.
It's totally, it's out of your hands. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to say that medicine, you know, the delivery of medical care to patients is a business, but the reality is there's a business transaction there and you have to be able to turn the lights on.
Right. This is really underlining passion behind you starting Revolution Health, because you wanted to, in a way, I see you taking full responsibility along with the profit, right? Which is a great thing. I mean, you fought for our country, which is a free country, and you should be able to come back and be a businessman and a doctor at the same time. But you start, in my opinion, you started this clinic so you could invest in people, right? That you would see a long-term return.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
And you know, my thing is, if I take insurance, I become a slave to the insurance company.
Right.
And that's just the truth. I mean, whether we agree with that or not, that's really the reality of it. And I don't think the insurance company has a role inside that office exam room between the patient and the doctor.
I agree.
They have to be removed from that. And it's between the patient and the doctor. At this point, the only way to do that is for the patient to pay us.
Right.
Now, there are things that we can do to save them money. We do everything we can to save them money at every step. And still be able to keep the lights on. But there's a lot of things that go on, you know, that patients don't get to see behind the scenes, how much time it spends us reviewing all of these labs.
Oh, I've seen you do it
in the way that we do this. It takes an incredible amount of time, not even in that room with that patient.
I've seen your war room, if you will.
Yeah.
Right. So I think you have another physician's assistant with you, or a
nurse practitioner,
practitioner, and a couple of nurses that come in and literally kind of look at these labs and kind of just walk through it, right?
That's right.
It can be a pretty lengthy deal for you guys.
Correct.
I can see you guys, it's a passionate deal for you too. I mean, you could spend all day doing it.
Well, we're looking for the answer. We're looking for a needle in a haystack.
Right.
And so, you know, again, going back to these labs and how do we get these normals and what does it actually mean for that patient? And so it's important to understand, you know, where do these labs come from? Well, there's a five-step process where the labs of performing the test will actually come up with these, what we call reference ranges. First thing they do is they select the test. So like for thyroid, TSH, they'll say, we're going to test TSH. Then they determine the reference population. So who are they going to check a TSH on and say, this is quote normal. Then they check a sampling method, and that's just the way they're going to test the blood for the TSH. Then they collect, process, and test the specimens as step four. Step five is that they're going to analyze these results. And so this is kind of the meat of the topic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they basically run this through a statistical analysis. And the Merck manual says that reference values vary based on several factors, including the demographics of the healthy population from which specimens are obtained and the specific methods and or instruments used to assay these specimens. And so basically with a statistical analysis, we're saying that normal is a 95% range. 95% of the healthy population falls within this range. So that means 5% have what's called a false positive, meaning that you're outside the normal range, but you're still, quote, normal, as defined by that population. The interesting thing to me is they say determine the reference population is step two. Well, who is that reference population and how do they determine that? One of the lab directors that I spoke with in the past, the healthy population that they used to determine normal was that the patient walked into the lab. That was the only criteria.
You know, it's interesting that you bring this up. When we had our first child and they used these weight measurements, right? Our child was always on the low end. And Courtney was like, this child's got to eat. So we were just like stuffing food in this kid's face, right? The kid's not even hungry.
Right.
Right? So I start, you know, Chad, I got to be honest with you. Google has changed my world.
Well, of course.
You know, I basically don't even need a doctor. At the end of the day, you can listen to this podcast or you can just Google everything. You don't even really need a doctor, right? Wrong. Do we have a wrong button? Marshall, could you just go wrong?
Wrong.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, so seriously, though, I Googled it, and I don't know if this is true or not, but one of the things I found out was, when I did my Google research, Chad, was there's a lot of fat babies in America. And they're comparing my relatively thin baby to a bunch of fat babies. I hate to say it, but it's true. It's not very politically correct. So I began to discover, even through those statistical comparisons, that I'm quite all right with my child being in the very low percentage.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, the BMI, body mass index, or those height and weight charts,
right,
are based on body habits. It's been a while since I've looked at it, but it's based on a 1980s, I think, was the last time we
they can't update that. They can't update that. They should update that every year.
Well, and they're talking about that. But
they're talking about it?
But the problem is that we're going again by normal and not optimal.
Oh,
and that's
gosh.
Another problem. So if we lived, you know, and Oklahoma is one of the most obese states in the country, if not the most obese. And so if we applied the data for Oklahoma to, you know, Colorado or California, which traditionally is much better as far as height versus weight and what's defined as obesity, then none of them would be obese and all of us. I mean, you got to look at how are you interpreting, how are you getting these normals? So when we look at things like, you know, where Sally came in and her TSH was off, what is defined as normal? And you can have people with hypothyroid that are in the normal category.
Right.
You can have people that are hyperthyroid in the normal category, and it skews your reference range.
Right.
Now, the concept from a scientific perspective, from the scientist's brain, is that if you get enough data, then it skews, or it will wash out those.
Right.
And of course, you throw out the outliers.
Right.
So one that's, you know, three times normal, you throw those out. And they've got a formula for how they do that. But if two-thirds of your population or a third of your population is technically abnormal, but you lump them into normals, then you have a very different reference range. So it's really important to keep, you know, to go back to, how did they get these normals? What does this lab result, independent of the reference range, what does this lab result tell me about this patient? And how can I use that result to help me better understand the patient's complaint?
Great stuff, Dr. Chad Edwards. I think we're out of time for today. But this is, for anybody listening, I mean, I think you have to view these podcasts as really valuable pieces of content. Because I think even to get, ask yourself, if you're listening, to get an hour with a physician, and a physician at Dr. Edwards' caliber is not only costly, but it's probably not even available to the average person. So I'm, Dr. Edwards... is, again, as much as I hate to compliment you to your face, I appreciate you doing this. And I know firsthand you do this because you love to do it. This is what you're good at, and you love to help people. I just wish you'd get me a Z-Pack. I mean, it's one little request. You know what I'm saying? Next time, my friend.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast with Dr. Chad Edwards. Tune in next week where we'll be going against the grain.